TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
We are the G.O.D.
We
came to rock the spot like Iron Man stars.
Hey to the innocencies
in the world today.
Chair Shot Radio, Chris Platt and the R.E.Y. Cash.
So listen to them clear and put the box right near your ears. Let your blood sink down your fears. Cause you can never fuck with Wu-Tang Killer.
Look at the chair. Look at the shit, my chair.
You are now listening to Chair Shot Radio. Always use your head.
Greetings and salutations, everybody. I'd like to thank you once again for the Tetsuya Naito podcast. All Naito, all Naito, all the time. All jokes aside, this is Chair Shot Radio. I told you guys I'm doing dailies this week. This is your boy Rance, a.k.a. Ray Cash. This is our Tuesday edition. And so with everything that's happened this week, we have had NXT TakeOver. We've had SummerSlam. And, of course, you know, you had your Raw and your SmackDown, which were big shows. But I think the one thing that might be bigger than all of them based on the totality of it was the G1 climax, and I don't know very many people who are more who are more prepared and more qualified to talk about that than my good friend from Potter's War, Mr. Chairshot himself, Andrew Balazs. So Andrew, appreciate you coming on with me, man. How you doing?
Not too bad. And I like the all Naito, or what was it, like Naito all Naito? Is that what we were going for with the podcast?
That's even better. All night so long.
Okay. Yeah, all night so long. Get a little bit of the song going. You know, we're good. I like that. That's nice.
Rich Swan might be upset with that, but you know, he'll be all right. He'll be all right.
Yeah, I think he'll be okay with it. Yeah. So no, that was nice. And the fact that you started off with that Naito topic and knowing you're a Naito fan.
Yeah.
I guess you're none too happy, huh?
Well, let me start with this, because I want to be real with the people. And I already gave you your heads up. I have not watched 1 minute of any of the G1. Not a minute, not a second. Everything I've seen has been through GIFs, thank you. And clips. I'm in IT, I should know how to say that. Clips online. That's all I've seen, right? So, of course, that makes me absolutely qualified to talk New Japan right now. But nonetheless, I do want we can start with Naito. We don't have to. I mean, we could start with the winner because, you know, the finals were like a night ago, I believe.
At that point, yes, it was a night ago, a morning ago, however you want to really word it. But yeah, I mean, we could start with the winner and then trickle down, which even angry Naito fans had to be like just elated that Ibushi beat the evil Jay White that is doing such a good job at being such a douchebag.
He's such a scoundrel, isn't he? He's a scoundrel.
Isn't he, though? And I know you're saying it in kind of a funny way, but he actually gets people to react the correct way as wrestling should. Like, there's legitimately people that just hate him because he's a douchebag. And I'm like, wait, that's his job. Like, he's doing good work.
It's twofold. Number one, he's getting the Japanese fans who are ultra respectful to act out of character. Like, they really hate him, number one. Mm-hmm. And number two, the American fans or the people who, not you, I'm not talking about you or any other people that I know that are real big fans, but you know, you have your quote-unquote gatekeepers who everything's got to be the way that they want it to be in New Japan because it's been this way forever. He's pissing them off because he's not wrestling what they say, 5-star matches every night.
Yep.
He's out here working on character stuff when, you know, people are used to just move, 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 strike, strike, strike. And that, in its own way, is getting him heat.
Oh, it's fantastic. I think one of the best things I read about the whole Jay White situation is after he won B Block, and that's what we'll say. I'm not going to hurt your feelings any until we get a little later on.
Thank you for that.
I think Chris Charlton, who's the British guy that does the direct translation on English commentary, tweeted out that after leaving Budokan that night, he heard a child basically have to talk his mother down on the subway saying, if Jay White beats Ibushi, mommy, please don't like throw away all your Ibushi stuff. It was so fantastic to actually just, you know, read him translating that around, that the Japanese fans, much like you just said, are kind of reacting out of character, or they're reacting more like Western fans do when the booking doesn't work out their way, and then they just get upset because they don't want to see this person win, and they don't understand why the person's being shoved down their throat. So it's so beautiful, and in a twisted way, like, Jay White is doing such a good job, and he can put on a good match too, even if you don't like his, you know, bootleg Hot Topic kind of attire. Like, it still works perfectly. And you also got to look at the simple dichotomy of the storytelling, where Ibushi's finisher is the Kamigoye, which means to surpass God, and he used the Kamigoye to surpass evil. So it's like this poetic justice kind of thing. So, you know, instead of God, he, you know, surpassed evil. So it's gorgeous, and like the subtlety and the poetic aspect, nature, whatever you want to really work on it, if you want to like read into the subtleties of Japanese, you know, storytelling.
Well, technically it didn't surpass evil. Evil's in L.I.J. Ha! New Japan joke.
That was a good one, actually. I like, but you know, evil says everything is evil. So
everything is evil. Yes,
so
absolutely.
White is evil because everything is evil.
So let me start with this, because I do want to get your thoughts on the finals. Were they the right two people? What did you think of Ibushi winning? But you kind of alluded that Naito fans were upset with that final. Naito fans aren't upset with that final, because I think everybody knew and expected and was happy that once Ibushi actually signed, you knew he was going to get hotshotted to the dome for the heavyweight championship match. He would have had one years ago had he signed. He just wouldn't sign.
Agreed.
So, like, that's fine. I think we expected Naito to get to the final, at least to the final. And I'm fine with Jay White in general because of all the things you said. The Bullet Club has reemerged and arguably might be better than they ever have. I know that's blasphemous, but
no,
like
that is a very fair statement, especially with the other big reveal that happened during the finals night.
We'll get there. Yes,
that's
big
just
part.
A little foreshadowing right there. That's all.
Look at that journalism. Did you go to journalism for that?
I did not. I majored in accounting and minored in psychology. So hey, take that for what it is.
That probably makes you more prepared and qualified than a lot of these other quote unquote journalists.
Perhaps.
But Kota Ibushi wins A block. Jay White Switchblade wins B block, and they proceed to have a. Well, you tell me. Tell me about the match. I know Ibushi won. If you're under a rock, Ibushi won, and he is going. He has the contract and the trophy and all that, and he will be main eventing one of the Dome shows. I don't know which night they're going
to
do it.
It is supposed to be the January 4th show that he's main eventing with Okada, and that got revealed actually today because they officially signed his contract. And the press conference, when they had it, they basically said to Ibushi, like, hey, what would you like out of all of this now that you have the contract? And he stated, first, I have to defend it against Evil and Kenta because they're who I lost to. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, if the New Japan office so deems it, I'm still kind of a, you know, fond of the Intercontinental Championship. So how about the 4th, I get my heavyweight shot, and then if I win, I face whoever has the Intercontinental on the 5th. So that could be Naito's roundabout way to get his heavyweight title shot if he holds on to it, you know, throughout the rest of the year.
Stop giving me hope. Don't do that. Don't do that.
I'm just saying, for right now, on paper, you know, it's like preseason football. Like, on paper, this is how everything would move, and this is who should win the division kind of thing. So that's how that would work.
So right now you're telling me the Giants have a chance.
No, I'm never going to tell you that, no.
Okay, well, there you go.
Like, on paper, they suck. On the field, on paper, it don't matter.
Talk to me about the match, man. What'd you think?
the match was actually wonderful storytelling. It's like, I think it's a match that you personally would enjoy because you've told me before you like the storytelling, the entertainment mm-hmm. more than the sport, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And Jay White comes down with this entourage of Bullet Club after telling Kota Ibushi the night before, it's just going to be you versus me, no ghetto. He's not going to be there just to fuck with him because Ibushi's a little naive. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, more than a little bit, bro, yeah.
I was being nice. I'm underselling it slightly. But, like, literally, all of Bullet Club is surrounding the ring. Like, it looks like a lumberjack match almost.
Wow.
Red Shoes sees the writing on the wall for a change, and he stops and he goes, nah, fuck it, y'all are gone. So before the match even starts, he kicks everybody out. Ghetto politics a little bit so that Ghetto can stay, but everybody else has to leave.
Okay.
So then Ghetto sticks around. Ghetto immediately gets involved in the match where, like, trips him or something like that. Then Red Shoes pops him to the back, and he's like, no, we're done. You're leaving. So it was a well-wrestled match. It really was, because everybody that isn't overly biased knows Jay White can go in the ring. Mm-hmm. It was a good match, and then there was a ref bump, as is most Jay White matches. And that ref bump allowed Ghetto to sneak his way back in and try to interfere with the brass knuckles and everything else he's been doing. Ibushi lays him out with a beautiful kick. Red Shoes comes to and sees everybody kind of down in the ring. Looks at Ghetto, kind of points and like, why the fuck is he here? Points at Rocky Romero on English commentary and calls Rocky Romero into the ring to get rid of Ghetto. So then Rocky gets his own like little moment to shine in this whole thing because he's been just bad mouthed in Bullet Club and, you know, Fredo, as he likes to call Ghetto with the, you know, the Godfather reference.
Yeah.
And that was nice. So Rocky got a little bit of justice in there, and the match was just, it was such great storytelling. Like I said, the poetic subtlety of the whole surpassing God to surpass evil, and everybody in the whole building was just erupting. You hit the foot stomping, the cheers. Jay White hit a nice Blade Runner at some point where you thought he was going to win, but he couldn't pin him because, you know, they were both exhausted. So then by the time he was able to get up, then Ibushi was able to do enough to come back in the match and win like he should have. It was such a great feel-good moment. Ibushi also has a historic moment with this, which I'm not sure if you noticed in what you were watching or all the articles that have gone down, but Ibushi is the first man in New Japan history to win the Best of Super Juniors, the New Japan Cup, and the G1 Climax. Oddly enough,
cool.
4 years between each other, because Super Juniors was 2011, New Japan Cup was 2015, and this was 2019. So it's so nice, and there's just so many little threads you can pull on. And Jay White still looked great with all of this because he's that old school type of heel that he told the truth when you didn't believe him. He started 03. He said, screw you guys, I'm winning 6 in a row. Nobody believed him because it never happened before. He told the truth. And, you know, that's old 80s kind of wrestling right there, where the heel is telling the truth, even though you don't want to believe it because he's the bad guy and you want to watch him go down in flames. Like, it's just, it's like I said, so many little things. So nice.
Well, as you said, I believe most of us believe and agree that the right person won. And I think there is, and I'm not going to be blasphemous and say if Okada makes it to the dome, it's Okada. Okada, I call Okada Solid Snake, because if you ever play Metal Gear Solid, like, he's impossible to kill.
Yeah. You're right about that one. Okada, definitely, there is something, I'm not going to say Superman or superhuman about him, but because he's not
born here.
Like Western Superman, you know what I mean? He's just so good and so fluid at what he does. It's hard to really ever believe he's going to lose.
He's not of this earth, bro. So you call it what it is. He's not of this earth. He's a mutant.
So we can just call him Goku?
Well, you know, he tries to have the little hair, but it can't grow too much. But yeah, close enough.
He went blonde. He went red, if you follow the newer stuff. There we go.
Yes. Well, I remember the red and the Scooby-Dooby-Doo and the balloons. Yes, I remember very well. But forecasting, was that 5 months down the line? 6 months, maybe?
January 4th, 5th, yeah.
Ibushi, Okada. Like, that's going to be ridiculous. That's going to be ridiculous, because those two people have no care for their body and no care for the other person's body. They're going to go out there and tell them and wrestle a masterpiece. Do you think this is Ibushi's crowning moment, or are they going to Naito him? Yes, I said it. Are they going to Naito him?
Wow, you're using it as like a verb now. That's interesting, right? And then, look,
I'm trying to wait till we get there, but it's fuming out of.
I know it's starting to spill out a little bit, but I think this has to be Ibushi's crowning moment with everything he's gone through and as long as he's been in the company, and it's just that they didn't trust him because he kind of had his nomadic mentality of how to wrestle and do all that other thing. This has to be giving him at least a title for one day. Because like I said before, with his offer, if they take him up on it, which they don't have to, but if they were to, even if it's a one-day reign to get the title on him and then flip it to Naito or something like that because Ibushi bit off too much, you know, more than he could chew kind of thing, that's a very Ibushi thing. Because we just talked about it. He's naive as shit. He's very childlike in his mentality. So he thinks he's Superman and can do anything. So that'd be a way to sort of check the mentality, but it still has him as a main eventer.
But that would be super unprecedented because Gedo and New Japan in general don't book like that. Like, it was a shock when Tanahashi held the belt for a month. So, like, that's I don't think that's – I'm not saying it's impossible, but that would be, like, a real big shock.
You're right. It is a little unprecedented because before they did, like, the three champions having zero defenses thing, basically, mm-hmm. that were, you know, flipping it real quickly. I think that was the first time since the early 90s. Because it was something between like Shinya Hashimoto and Vader or something like that. Like there was a
going back some time. Flipping.
Yeah. So I forget who it was. If it was Chono or Hashimoto or how that worked, but either way, it was still one of those interesting things that doesn't happen very often. But it's wrestling, so first times happen. Interesting stuff happens. And for all that, you never know. Somebody might lose the briefcase, or Okada might lose because. That was kind of an interesting wrinkle that popped up in the finals, too, where he got pinned in an undercard tag by Suzuki, who wasn't even in the G1 climax to begin with.
Which was crazy to me, but it's crazy to me that he wasn't in it, but his mm-hmm. underling was in it. And Lance Archer had a hell of a tournament, from what I've heard, but quite interesting.
I think Lance Archer, they used that more just to make him, because he was a tag guy for so long.
And maybe Bulldog is gone, yeah.
Yes, and that was his first G1 in like 5 years because I think he broke his back at some point, and he had a lot of injuries that kind of nagged at him, which is why I feel like they kept him in the tag division because they weren't sure what he could do. But yeah, he showed up and he showed out in the G1, so that was great. And Suzuki's got his title shot at the British, the Royal Quest show. So for all we know, Suzuki could make history that time. Because Suzuki would be only the third person to win the GHC, which is Noah's belt, the mm-hmm. Triple Crown, which is All Japan's belt, and the
IWGP.
Yeah. So he'd only be the third person to do that in history. So that's fun.
That would throw a wrinkle in it. That would be, I think, ultra interesting because I think no matter how great he is possibly the best champion of our generation. Okada is. Mm-hmm. In any company, I'm completely unbiased. But I think New Japan is falling into a pattern where it's like, oh, well, Naito's champ again. I mean, no, not I'm sorry. Okada's champ again. Great match. Okay. Okada's champ again. Like, that would really make people take notice and say, what the hell is going on here? You know? And I don't know how diehard New Japan fans would feel about that, but I know that would. Like, make me take notice and see what's going on. Plus, I mean, man, Suzuki is, God, he's so fucking compelling.
He really is. Oh, yeah, everything. Plus, you have to realize he's 50 or 51.
Yeah.
Like, he's a lot older than, like, most people that we're used to seeing perform at that level.
Absolutely.
And he's still scary as shit and beats the ever-living hell out of everybody. So... Yeah, it's interesting, and I agree if they keep in this Okada kind of loop, it could be hard for them to be taken seriously, in a sense. And that's the beauty, sort of the G1, because mm-hmm. we saw how over Sonata is in most crowds. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So they just have to finally sign Sonata, because Sonata's a free agent currently, and I think that's
part of the reason.
That's part of the reason why he kind of gets the Ibushi treatment. So
okay.
If they sign Sonata... Evil's starting to get better, you know, and they've got that whole thing with Kenta. If they sign him to something longer, they've got a lot of extra people that can still hold their own in a main event and that they could push. It's just it has to work out. Like, they have to sign. New Japan has to feel comfortable. And sadly, it seems like Okada's the comfort food. You know what I mean? He's the homemade stuffing. He's the peanut butter. Whatever the heck your comfort food is. And that's why whenever there's something unprecedented that goes on or something that shakes the boat too much, give it to Okada. Because the people still like him. He can put on a damn good match. He's a compelling champion within himself. So,
He's fucking 31. My God, he got 15 more years of this at this level if he wants to.
That's very true.
It's ridiculous.
It's more ridiculous to think the heavyweight championship is the only belt he's touched in that company.
Dog, I never thought about that, but you're so right. Wow.
Yes.
Oh, my God. I never thought about that, but you're right. Not a tag title, not a big card title, not even a six-man title. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Well, New Japan, you got a lot of Okada for the next 15 years. You mentioned the guy who I think, while Ibushi and Jay White kind of had their big moment, the crowning moment, if you will. But, like, I think this man stole the night. Kenta stole the night. And I think, and possibly the all the headlines. For those of you who aren't aware, Kenta, formerly Hideo Itami, Kenta again. for those
and before that, at home. Kenta Kobayashi.
Yes, real name Kenta Kobayashi. Yes. He who was he was kind of not mentored, but kind of cornered by Katsuyori Shibata. I think I said that right. Did I say it right?
You weren't too far off. That's the way they spun it, but they were teamed together before. That's why the takeover shirt he wore was actually their team. It wasn't an NXT reference.
I knew that.
I know you didn't. I'm just saying it for the people, in the grand scheme of things. And he trained at the LA Dojo to try to kind of get back into Japanese standards. And Shibata vouched for him, I think, on Dominion or whatever that was, the one show where he's just like, and this is the guy that's going to be entering on my behalf. I give him, my blessing. And
Kenta, that got flushed out of the toilet.
Yeah, Kenta just fucking shoved that in fucking Shibata's face. Like,
in classic Bullet Club fashion, someone gets screwed and a guy gets demolished. Kenta is your newest member of Bullet Club. And so it's not just the fact that Kenta joined, but the segment in which he joined, but the fact that Shibata got physical. I was reading my Twitter timeline and people were in tears. Like, this is a guy who, so to kind of lay out the seriousness of this down, the last we saw Shibata in the match, he headbutted a dude and started bleeding from his hairline. He had Chad's going to kill me. A subdural hematoma. I believe I said that correct.
I'm pretty sure you did too.
And, like, dude had to retire because he almost died. You know? And if you've ever watched Shibata wrestle, like, Shibata is made from that Suzuki cloth. That, like, he can't do halfway. It's all 100 is nothing. So to see him get physical again, just, it brought joy to my heart. But then instantly I started thinking, oh, shit. Kenta and Shibata at the Dome. And I know we're, again, 5-6 months away. But, like, did you get the same thought? Like, did you get excited?
Oh, yeah. Immediately. I mean, I was excited anyway because you said it perfectly when you said classic Bullet Club. Because a lot of New Japan fans only know the Kenny Omega merchandising, bootleg, cool, nerd-ass fucking heel, buy my t-shirt kind of shit. Where it basically turned into NWO 2000, where it just had everybody's buddy and it just was a fucking giant joke.
Absolutely.
And now this is exactly what you said. It's old school classic, just turn on the faces in the group. Everybody hated him anyway, so it takes that hatred to another level. It's, they treated him like an outsider, so he kind of made the outsiders reference with a little WCW kind of nod with just turning on him. And I think it was capped off and framed so beautifully because after Hideo did it, he had a big shit-eating grin on his face, and he called for the microphone, and they slide the mic in. He holds the mic for a second, and the way the shot pans out, you see someone just running full fucking bore down full the ramp.
Speed. Yes.
And you didn't know who it was. So at first, jokingly in my head, I'm going, I hope it's not Yoshihashi or he's going to bust his fucking head open again. And then it's Shibata, and Shibata just lays into him and lights him the fuck up, lights up the Tongans, and, you know, hits that wonderful delaying dropkick that he does. And
yeah.
It wasn't until Jado and the kendo stick came in, and then the numbers eventually overpowered him. And he even ate a PK from Kenta. So the doctors had to clear him for some level of contact. And that's what kind of perked me up, because I'm like, if he's the one doling out all the contact, that doesn't mean a hell of a lot to me. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But mm-hmm. the fact that he took the bump, and, you know, there was that big pose where Kenta did the Shibata, like the Indian leg
cross on his chest.
Oh my God. And I'm like, Shibata's going to fucking murder you.
Yeah,
like that's the best thing. And then you got Kenta versus Ishii in England at Royal Quest for the Never. And Shibata is synonymous with the Never. Mm-hmm. So you're putting that title on Shibata. And then, I mean, on Kenta. And then you have, exactly like you said, Shibata can challenge him for Wrestle Kingdom as a big kind of, maybe not a comeback match, give him a couple warm-up matches here or there to kind of get used to it again.
It's got to be the comeback. That's got to be the comeback, Andrew.
You think
that's got to be yes.
the only one?
When that music hits and he comes out in them black tights with the black boots and the towel and just sits down?
He could.
They're going to lose their mind.
They lost their mind last year when he did that at Dominion. All he said was, I'm alive, and walks off.
I remember that, yes.
So, you're right. It would make for the bigger moment if it's his only match, but I don't know if you want to do that. I don't know if you want to go cold in with Shibata. You know, like, even Daniel Bryan came back from, it might not have been as serious, like, I'm not even sure which injury is more serious, honestly, because they're both pretty crazy. But even Daniel Bryan kind of limped back into the main event scene with that awkward tag match with Shane and a couple smaller matches here or there before he tried to go full bore. I almost feel like they should, for Shibata's safety, put him in some, like, undercard tag matches with Okada and Tanahashi, because they've kind of become more buddy-buddy this year, because mm-hmm. they have a similar enemy. So mm-hmm. just kind of link Shibata into that, just to help him get in, even if it's maybe the road to Wrestle Kingdom, and he's just running a couple, like, six-man tags or something like that. I think you need to test that out, because as good as he looked, and as good as everything's been, that's fucking crazy. You know, just that he paralyzed himself. He had to have immediate brain surgery, and he, like, lost sight in one eye. Like, this is not a joke. You know what I mean?
It's terrifying if you really, and that was at that time when a couple of guys, because I think Yoshihashi also too, at the time was it
nothing serious at that time, because
but he was out for like 6 months.
The Shibata injury happened in May of 2017. The next biggest thing that happened was last year with Hiromu breaking his neck.
And
that was a similar thing where Shibata still finished that fucking match. He still walked back. And Hiromu did the same thing with a broken neck.
He finished
the match. He won the match. And then he walks back.
Oh,
and
that's right. He did beat Ospreay, didn't he?
No, Hiromu beat Dragon Lee.
Dragon Lee. Oh, yeah. He dropped him on his neck. Yeah.
Flexed and broke his neck. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, you, no problem. but still, so there's been some crazy injuries that are, like, really serious, and you know Hiromu's coming back soon, especially since Takagi's officially a heavyweight. So all New Japan fans are going to have a roller coaster of emotions, I think, the next couple months, because once Hiromu comes back, people are going to be crying. As soon as Shibata announces he's coming back, if he does, assuming this wasn't just a one-off teaser, you know, people going to be emotional. If Kenta, Okada, Ibushi, if Naito finally gets his crowning achievement kind of moment, like anything, like there's so many moving pieces right now. I understand why some people are frustrated, but it's also beautiful in just watching how it's going to play out. Shit, I remember reading so many tweets about people being angry that Jon Moxley was 5-0 in the G1. And people were just like, oh, New Japan pandering to all these white people because of their Western expansion. And
the white people?
You know what I mean.
Or all three of them?
You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, oh, the Western fans, this is bullshit. Moxley doesn't deserve to be where he is. Then what happened? Moxley tanked like a fucking brick, And then Ibushi and not Ibushi, that was the wrong block. But you know, Naito, Goto, Ishii, even Yano had a shot up until towards the end. So like, you have to let it play out in New Japan, and that's the funniest part watching Western fans' reactions to New Japan or any kind of Japanese wrestling, is they look at it through the purview of Western wrestling, and when they don't get exactly what they want right away, they get very upset and they get very emotional, and it's A, not that serious because it's a scripted fucking sports entertainment kind of show. Okay. And B, you have to let the storyline play out. Yes, lots of Western fans are used to WWE fucking up a storyline when it could have been good, but New Japan very rarely drops the ball on a storyline. The problem is the storyline may take 2 years to finish.
And that's the issue. So, yeah, and pretty much everything you said is right. But I think the difference is, and it has nothing to do with WWE messing up or not messing up a storyline, but all Western wrestling was built to be week to week. So your stories finished fast. Even your big storylines. The longest storyline in recent memory, in my lifetime, I can remember, was Sting and Hulk Hogan. You know how long that lasted? A year.
Oh, yeah.
But that felt like five. New Japan out here running storylines the last 2-3 years.
I get so, what you're saying, but you gotta remember,
it's just 70s, hard to deal with.
The 70s and 80s were built more on long term, and that's what Ghetto gets television. a lot of his inspiration from, because New Japan's not a weekly episodic television show like right. Nitro, Raw, SmackDown, Thunder, Heat,
sure.
Whatever you want to throw out there. They're a touring company, so they're active maybe, let's just argument say, 2.5 weeks out of the month. So he can get away with the old school Bruno Sammartino, Argentina Raca kind of Iron Sheik kind of way of building it, mm-hmm. because you're going to be invested for a month or two, because you know, okay, Destruction Tour is what's coming up like on the main cards like in September or late August, probably September because of Royal Quest. So mm-hmm. that's their smaller show. King of Pro Wrestling is the important one. So mm-hmm. and Power Struggle is the one that usually ends up the year. So mm-hmm. you know the benchmarks, you know the goalposts, whatever you want to really say. So Destruction Tour, nobody's going to really be upset what happens there. Nobody's going to be quote unquote overly invested, because that's where you build the storyline. That's where you kind of make the rest of the story. And that's it's hard, because you are completely right when you say that the way the modern fan kind of perceives it is exactly a week, a year, 2 months, something like mm-hmm. that is when a feud is done.
Show to show, yeah.
Exactly. So it's funny because you hear the same argument when people complain about WWE, that they go, oh, they ended that feud too quickly, or, oh, you know what I mean.
It's like, too far left or too far right, and in the middle, red. Nobody likes it because it's not what they want. It's always going to be somebody that complains
I just find it hilarious that not saying you, but some people say that WWE doesn't give their storylines enough time, and then out of the other side of their mouth go, well, I can't get into New Japan because I can't watch it for a year and expect the story to pay off like a year and a half later or something like that.
Yeah, there's no middle ground. Yeah,
I'm like, well, you got to like it one way or the other, so figure it out.
it kind of reminds me of being a baseball fan in America mm-hmm. and then watching a cricket game. It's essentially the same game, but it's totally different, mm-hmm. you know, or even football Americanized and football worldwide. Like there's essentially the same premises. I mean, American football is like got a million rules and shit, but you know what I mean? But you look at it totally differently, even though essentially it's having the same goal. So you said it perfectly. New Japan is not a television company. They're a touring company. Whereas every company that we, being from America or the West, have been raised on, WWE, WCW, ECW, TNA, Ring of Honor, World Class, AWA, anything that's had regular episodic television in our lifetime, I'm 31, I think you're about the same age as me.
I'm 33.
Yeah, all we know is week to week, month to month, story to story. I mean, we're talking G1 and I want to stay on G1, but if you look at WWE just for this weekend, Raw and SmackDown had 4 or 5 segments matches that could have been on SummerSlam.
Yep.
But they didn't have time.
Which is kind of a nice thing to say those words.
Yeah, no, I was very, SummerSlam didn't feel like SummerSlam. Like, it was a great show to me, but it didn't feel like a big SummerSlam, but I was still happy with it. But it was cool to see them tie the loose ends up, Drew and Cedric and Dolph and Miz and Roman and Buddy and the Bryan story. Like, it's cool to see them tie those ends off of a pay-per-view. But if you're in New Japan, and another thing without not having television is New Japan doesn't tell storylines through promos or storylines through backstage interactions. They tell storylines through, as you alluded to in this podcast a number of times, through matches. So if you watch a series of 7, 8, 9 matches, the Kenta turn, you said every match there was a little more wrinkle, another wrinkle that got added in and got added in. And when he turned, it made sense. But that's not what we're taught. And, you know, you have to learn that. And once you learn it and once you get it, it's great. Now, all this applies to everything except for Tetsuya Naito. What's wrong, bro? Talk to me. What's going on, man?
What the hell? I still brought it back to that.
Why does Gato hate Naito? What did Naito hit on his girl? Like, what did Naito, like, did he, when he had the old IC belt that he broke, did he throw it and hit Gato in the head? Like, what does he pick on him in the back because Gato is short? Like, what is the problem, dog? Like, I don't understand. All jokes aside.
I get you.
All jokes aside, you cannot tell me that the booking of Tetsuya Naito is not at the least weird. And what I mean by that is, he's still put in big situations. He had the big feud with Jericho about a year ago. He's been IC champ 2-3 times in the past year. You know, he had the big feud with the Bushi where they tried to kill each other like night after night. Like, he's had big moments. I'm not saying he's like been relegated to the never, you know, or like he's a 6-man tag wrestler now. I'm not saying that. But this is a guy who consistently was for years voted the most popular wrestler in Japan. This was a guy whose story is one of the most beautiful stories you can look at, from Stardust Genius being earning his spot and having to take it away from him because the crowd wasn't behind him, and being sent to excursion never to be heard from again, and coming back and rebuilding himself and becoming, you know, getting over again. And the whole story is amazing. Then building himself up to winning the G1 and getting to that dome match 2 years ago with Okada. It's beautiful. Three years ago.
You're right.
It's a beautiful story. And in any other company on God's earth, and probably some other planets out there too, he would have won that match. So you have Tanahashi, who's the ace. All respect, to get it. I'm not a Tanahashi guy because I didn't grow up watching Tanahashi. So, like, what he does doesn't mean anything to me. But I respect and understand what he means to Japan, to that company. But, you know, Tanahashi beats Kenny because Kenny's leaving and they need to get the belt to Jay White. Kenny wins because, you know, he's been due for a bunch of years because he led the Western expansion and just had a run of matches we've never seen before. Like, and somewhere in those 2 years, you're telling me Naito couldn't have won the belt for 1 month? Naito also had, when he fought Jericho in the Dominion match, mm-hmm. he was squashed in 27 minutes. That was a glorified 27-minute squash. Go back and watch the match. Naito had very little offense. Jericho beat the holy hell out of him. He got his win back at Wrestle Kingdom. But he's put in such weird situations it's almost akin to how WWE fans feel about Finn Balor. Because Finn Balor started off first night in the company on the main roster, a top five draft pick, drafted to Raw. First night, they make a big deal about Finn on the show. He wins the triple threat and then fights Roman Reigns one-on-one. Roman Reigns, who let people tell you never loses, beats Roman clean in their first match, either first or second night in the show. Mm-hmm. First month in the company, wins the Universal Championship. A brand new championship, the championship of the biggest show on wrestling, in wrestling, in the world, gets hurt, comes back, and never gets put in the same position again. And then finally builds himself back up after all these months and years and obscurity and doing nothing to that Royal Rumble match against Brock and loses. Now, him losing to Brock made so much sense because Brock had to lose to Seth. That was the thing. Cool. But, like, those, their parallels are like, so similar. And I just don't understand what they're doing.
It's complicated. And
that's our show, guys. Thanks for listening.
It comes down to that long-term booking aspect I was talking about before. Because in 2016, he did hold the belt for a month or two, whatever it was. Because he took it off of Okada after he won the New Japan Cup, defended against Ishii, and then lost it at I believe, Dominion.
To Tanahashi, right?
I thought he lost it back to Okada. And that's what started Okada's almost two-year reign. Because it went from Dominion to Dominion.
So
I think that's what that was. And it's the long-term booking aspect where they booked Okada to hold it for a long time. Then just like you said, Omega was kind of given it because he did so much with the Western expansion. He was putting up good matches. There was fan support. There was, you know, monetary support of giving it to him. So they decided to give it to him. Then he leaves. So if all of the comments and concerns and rumor mill kind of stuff can be believed, that I think Kenny kind of made mention to, and Meltzer, who's, you know, not always 100% right, but still, there was that logic of Kenny wasn't supposed to lose to Tanahashi, and he was supposed to hold it until Madison Square Garden and drop it to Okada. So it's weird because it looks like Tanahashi and Jay White have gotten undeserving championship runs when it could have been Naito, but really they were more stopgap, you know, transitional champions, if you want to call it that.
Well, my man be a transition, baby. Let him be a transition. Let him be a conjunction. Let him be an article, anything. Just give him – I'm sorry. Please continue.
No, you're right, because I think the point of the matter was that it gave Tanahashi a little bit more to his resume, which if you've seen any of his matches this year – you know, he's not looking like the old Tanahashi. This G1 was his worst one since like 2011 or something like that. So it's just the writing's on the wall that Tanahashi's going to have to start slowing down and maybe transitioning more to legend status. So I think that was just one more feather in his cap because now he's an 8-time. He's not just, you know, so he's increased his kind of stranglehold on the most title reigns by one more. You know, he was the first one to actually cash in the briefcase successfully. So he's got that to his name. It's just, I think they did that out of respect for Tanahashi and what he did to add to his legacy. Jay White, the new evil bad guy, the new evil gaijin, whatever you really want to call it, he was easy to move over to Madison Square Garden to have Okada bit, you know, win for the big moment. And Naito's probably getting his moment next year. That's the way it looks to me, because just like you said, where people are going to start getting sick of Okada, people got sick of Okada towards the back half of his run.
100%.
And they started cheering for literally Zack Sabre, Sonata, anybody that was facing Okada got a big reaction than Okada did. So I think the Japanese fans still respect him and what he can do when he's still a good champion to them, but they themselves also want a change in the landscape. And Ibushi could be the beginning of that. You know what I mean? Even if he were to lose to Suzuki or lose on some kind of fluke, because that's something that hasn't happened either, where you haven't seen the champion lose from G1 to the Dome Show. You haven't seen the briefcase switch hands. You haven't seen any of this interesting stuff that could very well happen this year because it's wrestling. Something has to happen for a first time, and it keeps everything interesting. Yeah. So I think Naito's time is next year, where he's going to get a solid run. It could be because of Ibushi, or maybe instead of just getting the back-to-back, maybe New Japan just says, you know, have a champion versus champion type thing, or Naito gets a shot somehow over the next couple months. But Naito's getting a shot probably by Dominion, is what I like. Maybe he'll win New Japan Cup again, but I think within a year's time, we'll see Naito have another reign. Because it feels correct.
I cede all knowledge to you because you know this stuff a lot better than I do. I'm telling you, as a guy who I'd say right now, Naito and Roman are my favorite wrestlers. So like I'm 1A, 1B. As a guy who would say Tetsuya Naito is one of his favorite wrestlers, I've almost given up hope and kind of detached myself from that because I just don't see it happening.
But tell me, yes, wouldn't that make it bigger when he finally does? If he gets
beaten, can I be honest with you?
Sure, go.
No, it's sometimes it can be too late.
You think it's too late for a night though?
I think it's too late for people to care like they would have. Yes.
Really?
I do.
It's interesting. No, I'm only saying it's interesting because
LAJ is
still the most over faction in the company. He still gets huge reactions, and I think it's one of those concepts of he doesn't need the title to be as over as he is. So
very true. Very
true. People kind of feel that maybe it's taken for granted a little bit, but the long-term booking isn't in his favor at the moment, but it's not hurting him per se. So we might see a little more dissension in LIJ, especially with Sonata getting popular and Shingo becoming a heavyweight. You could always do something interfactionally to kind of keep that hot, mm-hmm. keep it interesting, and then have Naito, you know, prove the reason why he's the leader and then have a big shining moment at some point next year. So it's interesting. I get where you're saying where it could be too late, but with Naito and the fact that his whole concept is tranquilo mm-hmm. and if he's not bothered, you shouldn't be bothered. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's that perfect storm character, honestly, where if they did even overlook him a little bit, his character doesn't seemingly get ruffled by it. So
right.
I think
but you
fans
know he
have kind of been okay with it.
But you know he hates being in the IC title picture, bro. Like, you know he hates it. Like, I'd much rather him, like, put him in the never title. It's like, put him anything away from the IC championship. Because he had, and I'm sure it's character, but he's so convincing with his character, he cares mm-hmm. so fucking little about the Intercontinental Championship. It's laughable at this point, you know? And he goes out there and wrestles his ass off, but like it feels like, man, it feels like he almost looks at it as an insult because he knows he should be IWGP Heavyweight Champion.
No, I get you, and you're not wrong. And even Naito's made comments in the past where I think after he won it back from Suzuki that one time, he said something like, this title and me kind of just find each other. Or, you know, like, it's one of those, like, backhanded comments where he's just like, it's the second, like, the number two title, and I guess I'm always going to be the number two guy kind of thing. Yeah. Yeah. You know, so he's made those little snide comments, and you can read into it as you want to. But Naito is just, he's in a class amongst, like, of his own, and I don't just mean that talent-wise, because there's a lot of good talent over there, but interviews, the personality shines through. Interviews, he's even said that even though you see his knees taped all the time, and you know his body's breaking down a little bit, he's even said he'd rather have 3 good years than 10 half-assed years, essentially.
Mm-hmm. I saw that, yeah.
So he's just one of those guys that it's interesting, and I know he's going to get his day in the sun, more or less, soon, because it's setting up so nicely for him to kind of have his redeeming arc where he, you know, he overcomes Okada or Ibushi or whoever it is, and maybe beats Okada at Dominion or for the title, or even after he already has it and beats back Okada, maybe Okada and Tanahashi drop down into the heavyweight tag or something like that. So it'll pull together what we said before about how Okada's never touched another belt. So maybe that would be a good way to kind of push him down a rung, just to kind of give some space in the main event so we can have a new main event breathe for a couple years. Because Okada is going to get oppressive. His stranglehold over the belt is not going to be fun for much longer for most people, regardless of how good he is. And I think New Japan knows that. It's just a matter of getting there because of long-term booking.
So I want to pitch you on something.
Shoot.
Because my next question was going to be, where do you – well, I kind of want to end the show, and we're not – I mean, we can – I don't want to hold you up all night. I have a few more questions for you, but I do kind of want to end the show seeing as, much like you do with after SummerSlam or after the Rumble, like your forecast for Wrestle Kingdom. So I want to ask you where you see Naito at Wrestle Kingdom, but I want to pitch you on an idea.
Go for it.
Naito recently had an interview where he talked about him saying, I'd rather have 3 good years and break my body down than have 10 half-assed years. Mm-hmm. He mentioned about him and Shingo having to wrestle each other in the G1 and saying he was expecting Shingo to come and try to take the crown from him, essentially taking over LIJ. He just didn't think it would happen so soon. With Shingo having such a great start to his career in New Japan, and him finally admitting he's a heavyweight, even though he's been a heavyweight from the very beginning. That dude's bigger than half the heavyweights right now.
I get what you're saying.
What do you think about Shingo stepping up, trying to take out Naito at the Dome, Shingo winning and kicking Naito out, and then Naito had to do his own thing outside of LIJ and building himself up that way without a stable?
That's interesting. If Shingo just takes LIJ from Naito, mm-hmm. I mean, Shingo has a history of leading heel factions because he was the leader of Antias and Dragon Gate, and he's very much a good heel figurehead for a lot of stables, and I like that a lot. I do, the whole idea of basically LIJ even getting a little sick of Naito's like tranquilo shit and just being like, you know, you keep holding us back. Perhaps they could see it that way, because that's the one takeaway, is that they've never beaten, no LIJ member has beaten Naito in the G1. So they could kind of start to resent him a little bit. And if he's not where he's at, it's not unprecedented for stables to have a power shift, because Suzuki-gun was born out of that. Because it was Kojima-gun first, and then they kicked Satoshi Kojima out of his own stable and renamed it Suzuki-gun. So
Bullet Club's done it like 3 times.
Yes, that's true too.
Didn't Chaos kick Shinsuke out before he left?
No, he passed the torch to Okada. That was more of a respectable way. But Chaos was born out of the ashes of GBH because they turned on Makabe.
Yeah.
Yes. So that was where that Chaos one came from. But I like it. I do like it a lot. And Shingo's the perfect guy to kind of step in and step up. So that's interesting. I do like that line a lot. And that would give Naito maybe a new fire to prove himself. Mm-hmm. Maybe Naito could win and then maybe say LIJ was holding him back. And
it works both ways, yeah.
It does. And then you could also see in that nice fan split of were they more Naito fans or were they more LIJ fans? And does Shingo turn it into something that they don't like so then more people support Naito? And that could just be
got
interesting.
Got you thinking, huh? Got you thinking.
I do like that a lot, yeah.
The only thing is when, and I'm putting this in the universe, when Hiromu comes back, he can't stay with LIJ if they're going to go that way. Because that would make LIJ, and I mean, God, they're like tweener factions now, because they're all heels that are way too cool to be booed.
Yes.
But like Hiromu is as genuine as he gets, babyface. Like that dude's so lovable. If he was here, I'd hug him right now. Like he's such a lovable dude.
Oh yeah.
And it wouldn't fit with Naito. It makes sense because like he's like the little brother who like, man, you on my nerves, but come on with me. But with Shingo in control of that faction, like, you feel like they're going to get down and dirty, down to business. And they might even change the name. Because I know Ingobernable is, you know, ungovernable, but in AAA and here, like, it's been more like, yeah, we just kind of chill out. I see Shingo maybe changing the structure of that faction a bit if they go that route. But I'm really fantasy booking. So I'm like 6, 7, 8 months down the line. But I think that'd be a nice spot for Naito to still have kind of a prominent match away from the IC title and to build somebody else up, because we are in, you said it yourself, Tanahashi is almost at the end of his main event singles run. Okada can't keep the stranglehold on the belt. We're seeing a lot of the next generation of guys step up and cement themselves as future main eventers. And I feel like with this Dome show being 2 nights, they're going to, especially with the Western expansion, they're going to want to start showcasing a lot more of those of that younger talent.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely, 100%. And it's nice to see also, just as a small takeaway, is that the finals night opened with the LA Young Lions against the New Japan Young Lions. And the LA Young Lions beat the ever-living fuck out of the New Japan Young Lions. Like, they dominated that match. And then the New Japan Young Lions that were seconding the match after the match was over got in the LA Young Lions' faces. And, like, there's a East versus West kind of, like, West Side Story kind of you know, turf battle. So it's interesting because I like that. I like the fact that they're playing up the Western expansion, essentially, through the Young Lions. And the fact that they don't really... I don't know if there's a lack of respect, but they're trying to prove something to one another that, you know, one side is better than the other one. Mm-hmm. And it's the same kind of concept. And Naito is right up there. It could be interesting. He might technically have to take over for the Tanahashi spot. So if Tanahashi does drop down, they might need Naito to go full babyface. Not maybe Stardust Genius again, because I don't think he can ever really go back to that gimmick. No. But definitely rise up as 1A, 1B with Okada. And Shingo is a perfect catalyst for that. So I do like that fantasy booking a lot.
Thank you. it's a talent of mine. Speaking of Young Lions, once again, hashtag journalism. Is Moxley going to kill Shota eventually? Like, I just feel like that's built for Moxley to turn on Shota. Like, very quickly. Maybe not quickly, but you know what I mean. Like,
eventually. I'm only going to say no. Because Shota definitely seems like the little kid with the cool uncle. Because Moxley treats him nice. Moxley gave him his Death Riders jacket. So the last two nights, you know, he'd come out and do the same pose. And, you know, it exactly reminds you of something like, you know, a little nephew or like a son or a daughter that just wants to be like you. So they dress like you and they do the same pose and they try to do all this other stuff. And Shota's even been a little more disrespectful here or there and getting in people's face and pulling off a little more aggression. So I think they're going to build with it more than have Moxley turn on him, because people have actually taken a big liking to that pairing, and I don't think they'd want to, like, make Moxley the ultimate bad guy on his way out, especially if there's still that built-in caveat of he could show up whenever he wants because of how his contract worked out, or he could come back later for a Wrestle Kingdom date or something like that.
Well, see, that's the reason I thought about it, was because... Very clearly at the Wrestle Kingdom, I think he'll be full-time AEW and won't have the opportunity to wrestle as much in New Japan. And very clearly they've shown, AEW has shown that they're going to take precedent in the dates, because he couldn't wrestle at the G1 special in Dallas. There's been a thing about him wrestling on television for them. Like, there's been some things with that. Mm-hmm. So what better way to put over... he's not a young lion anymore, I don't think, right? He's a full member of the roster.
Shota is still technically considered a young lion. He's, like, right towards the end of his Dojo Boy career, where he might go on excursion, or he might be just lifted up like Toa Hanare was a couple years ago.
Gotcha.
But he's very close to graduation, or whatever you want to call it.
But and then he's Red Shoe's son, too, so you know they care about him.
Correct.
But that would be a hell of a way to kind of launch his career, by Moxley turning on him, then maybe having like a blow-off match. And Mox will still win the match, but Shota would show that babyface fire. And hey, kid set. You know?
I get what you're saying. But you know what? How I'd like this to go, since we're fantasy booking a little bit?
Go ahead.
I want Juice to beat Moxley for the U.S. title, because you know that's all that whole thing was set up for, was just a rematch to probably put the belt back on Juice so Moxley can leave. Then I want there to be kind of like an almost like movie-like moment where maybe Moxley just leaves his jacket, he's upset, walks off, and Shota just kind of sits there, picks up the jacket, and then he kind of goes after Juice and tries to kind of avenge Moxley. So Shota challenges for the U.S. title. Juice beats the ever-loving fuck out of him. But that would be a good way to show that he's got some balls, he's got some moxie, so to speak, and then send him on to excursion. with that kind of interesting allure still left on the character, because you're like, all right, so the moxie rubbed off, he challenged for a belt, failed miserably, but like you showed that he still has the guts and he still has the willpower to try to avenge something, and then maybe even leave it that Shota never quits or something like that, or he still wants to go after Juice, but he'll be back kind of thing, Terminator-esque, and then goes away for like 6 months, a year, whatever it is, and comes back with his new gimmick.
Speaking of Juice, Juice is a really perplexing enigma to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, and that's kind of his thing, in and out the ring.
In a way, yes.
But people are so high on the dude, New Japan fans,
mm-hmm.
because he's charismatic as all hell.
Yes.
But he's been put in a lot of situations that are weird. Like the back and forth with Cody just didn't work for anybody. It didn't help anybody. In my opinion, I could be by myself on that. But, you know, and he revolves around the U.S. title, has been for the past year and a half, ever since he had the back and forth with Jay. Because that was when he won it from, right? Jay White, right?
Correct.
See, for a guy who doesn't watch every show, I know what I'm talking about.
I'm impressed, yes.
But I just, you know, and now the expectation is that Mox is going to put him over and, you know, no DQ match or whatever it is that they're going to end up doing at whatever show. But, man, this is going to sound really a bit harsh, and I don't mean it to sound that harsh, but is Juice worth all of this work they're putting behind him?
A loaded question, and
I try to do my journalism. Yes,
I mean it's a good question. It's a good journalistic question. Yes, and it's funny because much like you say, the Japanese New Japan and the more I guess hardcore Puro Resu fans don't mind Juice because they understand the gimmick he fills, and he's really over with the crowd. And even if it is mostly the female crowd, it's just he still has his place and people still love him, and he panders to kids by giving his hat or his glasses or whatever gimmick he's wearing that night. And it works really, really well. But the Western fans are not behind him at all because it's a corny fucking gimmick.
Oh, corny as fuck.
Just being the flamboyant, what the fuck does that even mean? Like, he comes out looking like a tie-dye Undertaker, like, this entire G1, so...
That's really good. Thanks for that.
You know, so, like, what is this? Like, you just like to party and have a good time and dress colorfully? Like, that's a gimmick? So, I think that's where the disconnect is. Plus, he had to go back and prove him. Like, I think New Japan respects what he did because he already started wrestling, because we all know he was CJ Parker in NXT. Mm-hmm. And then when he went to New Japan, he chose to go into the dojo and do the JoJo Boy lifestyle instead of just jump onto the main card because he already had experience. Mm-hmm. So he did it the right way by them. And Japanese lifestyle, Japanese thinking when it comes to corporations, business, whatever, they're very, very loyal to people that show loyalty and respect to the company. Mm-hmm. So I think for Juice, they believe he's worth the investment because he chose to play the game the correct way, so to speak. And they respect the fact that he respected their ways and the dojo lifestyle, coming up the hard way and earning everything. So it's probably going to be a slow build with him because nothing is overly captivating and he may never ascend higher than like upper mid guard.
Yeah.
But I think they're still going to treat him well because of the respect he showed the company. And that goes a long way in Japan.
That brings me to my next question. This might be the toughest question of the night.
I don't know, 3 cans of Pepsi and a donut?
Surprisingly, that's the answer.
Oh, yeah! No. I win! Let's go home now!
it was going to be a joke question. You took away my joke. I was going to ask you, is Taguchi Japan still a thing?
Yes. Yeah, they're still the 6-man champions.
Are they?
Yeah, are. It's Taguchi, Makabe, and Yano.
Yano isn't in Chaos anymore. But I thought him and Makabe were it's not Great Bash Shield. What's the other thing that they had? Makabe was in the tag team with the other dude.
Makabe was in a tag team with Hanma, and that was right back Chiyo. Makabe and Yano go back years, but Taguchi Japan is interesting because Taguchi Japan was basically something Ryusuke Taguchi made up out of the faces that weren't really aligned with the stable. That's why it was Juice, Tanahashi, David Finley.
ACH. You know,
yeah, ACH. Ricochet, I think, was in it for like a half a minute. You know, so it was never really seriously taken at first. And
they got jackets, Andrew. They do.
They have those glasses with the, you know, star shape and everything that are multiple colors, too. But I think it's because Tanahashi and Okada have buried the hatchet that anything that was kind of Tanahashi or Taguchi Japan and Chaos kind of blended a little bit.
Okay.
Because they're kind of fulfilling the same goal, the same purpose now, where it's more, these are the quote-unquote good guys, and they're going up against Suzuki-Gun and Bullet Club. And because Okada and Tanahashi are cool, everybody else is cool.
Okay. So, forecasting to the Dome Show, Wrestle Kingdom. It's got to be Hiromu versus Ospreay, right?
You would think. Because they have to play that up as the big thing and the cat fight or whatever they want to call it, just as the joke, because Hiromu always called Ospreay a cat. And I think that would be nice, just to have that as the crowning achievement, kind of to get the belt off of Ospreay, to maybe transition him to heavyweight, or to kind of stop having him, it's a word I don't like using, but gatekeep on the light heavyweights, because he's like the Okada of the light heavyweights, where if there's a reason to put it on somebody else or somebody else doesn't work, give it to Ospreay.
Like, so he's the new Kushida.
Yes, Kushida at his height. Because if you notice, towards the end, Kushida fell off a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, Kushida started eating a lot of losses and not looking quite as dominant. But, yeah, Ospreay falls into that Kushida slot nicely, I guess we could call it that. But Ospreay's big enough to move up, and I think he needs to probably move up after the Dome Show. Maybe if Naito still has the IC, have Ospreay challenge Naito. You're telling me that's not going to be a good match?
It's going to be a good match. I think the question... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was agreeing. I was like, yeah.
That might be the best match of the night if they do that. Mm. And this is selfish. That does nothing for Naito. That match is tailor-made to put over Ospreay. We know at this point Naito can have great matches. Like, this year, many people think Ospreay is the wrestler of the year from an in-ring standpoint. And you know what? That's hard to argue against. Based on what he's done,
he's close
this year. Yeah, he's up there. It's a small conversation. But I think Naito fans just want to see him put in prominent situations that better his character and his standing, and that would do the exact opposite.
Well, you have to look at it this way: since NXT and New Japan are somewhat similar in how they deal with championships, if Naito loses the IC title, all he needs is like a solid win on the next tour, and then he could challenge for whatever he wants to challenge for. Using a loss to elevate somebody new doesn't sink somebody like it does on, say, WWE main roster. Because it's just a nice pass moment, then the person gets, you know, rebounds a little bit, gets their bearings back, whatever you want to say, and then they'll win a tournament. Or they'll pin the fucking champion in a tag match, and then suddenly they get themselves a shot.
So, to kind of put a bow on the G1, what is New Japan's fascination with continuing to book Hirooki Goto and Toru Yano in prominent situations in this damn tournament?
Okay, that's an easy answer, honestly. Yano is always billed as a spoiler. He's the Sublime Master Thief for a reason.
Master Thief. I've never heard that. Okay.
Oh, okay. But that's kind of what they refer to him as with his recent, you know, more comedic gimmick.
Yeah.
He normally doesn't do this well, but there was, I think, a run of 3 years in a row where he'd get a win over Minoru Suzuki, Like, Suzuki just couldn't beat him. And he was the reason why Suzuki wouldn't win the G1, because he just couldn't get past Yano and it pissed him off and he'd go on a tailspin a little bit. So Yano is just very good at usually getting 4 to 6 points. He got 8 this time, which is good for Yano. Mm-hmm. But it's the same thing with, like, New Japan Cup. Yano has gotten out of the first round of the New Japan Cup, I think, 4 out of the last 5 years by sheer bullshit. So it's just a Yano thing, I guess, because, you know, people still like him. He's charismatic. He's a great character. He's still over enough to get a little bit of a bone. Goto, though, Goto had an awful year last year.
Yeah.
Goto only had 6 points, 3 wins, got destroyed by everybody, was completely a joke. And that was coming off of a year where he got destroyed by everybody, so much so he had to join Chaos just to try to stabilize and stop sucking. Because your boy Naito beat the ever-living piss out of him. Beat him, for the New Japan Cup in 2016. That's why Naito got himself the title run, which, even if it was a month or two, still. Goto went on such a tailspin in 2016, joined Chaos, won the Never, kind of stabilized a little bit, and then went back to sucking. So
He lost to Elgin and he lost to Tai Chi. That's not good.
Oh, no, I agree with you completely. But this was supposed to help the Shibata tie-in. Because if you notice, he came in with the LA Dojo all the time. And the story was, well, Goto and Shibata are former high school, you know, peers, friends, whatever you want to say. So they go way back. Goto apparently trained at the LA Dojo to lean up a little bit and maybe learn a new trick here or there, work on something, and Shibata helped him with that. So I feel like this is all after we saw the Kenta turn, building towards Shibata's involvement in the storyline now, because Goto had a great bounce back here, looked solid. Goto is never a bad character, a bad wrestler, however you want to look at it. It's just so much that the last 4 or 5 years have not been nice to Goto, so to speak. Mm-hmm. He's kind of been in the Naito spot for a little bit, since you like to use that as kind of a descriptor. That, you know, he got pushed a little bit, then lost. He went, like, backed his way into winning the block for 2016, and then lost in the G1 finals because of tiebreakers and all that other shit. So he has a big tendency to get to a big spot and fail. And that's kind of what we've been used to the last 3-4 years, something like that. It's time for Goto to have a little bit of a comeback. Goto is still one of their top guys. And does that necessarily mean IWGP run? No. But it does does mean he's going to get a little more of a respectable run here or there. Maybe just be looked at more as a threat instead of he's just a speed bump, which is kind of what he's been the last few years. So well, I think this was just to build him back up after he's been destroyed the last couple years.
How it's been told to me is, and this is by my guys Josh and Jeremy from Keeping It Strong Style and Social Suplex.
Sure.
Then, you know, they're into this shit just like you are. Like, that's their life. I've been explained that he's the Japanese Dolph Ziggler.
There's two ways to look at it, because lots of people also call him the Japanese Bret Hart with the way he wrestles.
Oh, yeah. So this isn't from a wrestling perspective.
A booking perspective is what you mean.
Yeah, yeah.
So Japanese Dolph Ziggler is a... it's not wholly inaccurate, but I still feel like he's still more legitimate than Ziggler is.
He might be.
I definitely get what the comparison is meaning, is that, you know, he's just shoehorned in there if they need somebody, or he's just thrown a bone here or there. He's still somewhat okay, and he's still sort of a main eventer to most people, even though he's not going to really win anything. I get where they're going with it, but I think it's one of those things where I feel like Goto is probably going to have a better run after this rebuild than Ziggler would, no matter what he did.
I completely agree. So let's kind of put a bow on this thing, man. So looking, and I know we have two major shows coming up in the next few months before we get to Wrestle Kingdom, and a couple of tours and stuff. But kind of forecasting where we're gonna be at, Wrestle Kingdom just for the hell of it. So we know we're going to get Ibushi Okada probably. Mm-hmm. I think both you and I agree that if Hiromu's healthy, it'll be Hiromu Osprey for the junior heavyweight.
Yeah.
I don't expect G.O.D. to lose the tag titles.
I don't either.
So I don't know what they're going to do with the heavy tag now that, you know, the Bucks are gone. Killer Elite Squad is done. Mm-hmm. You know, and G.O.D. and Eagles and Nada have wrestled each other more than Cena and Orton. So, like, something different. Yes. So that would be nice. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, I think you liked my Naito idea with Shingo, but that would probably mean that Naito would need to lose the IC title. I don't know. Just what are you thinking? The bigger matches. What is Tanahashi going to do? What is Jay White going to do? Somebody pitched me the other day on Jay White versus Naito for the IC title. That's interesting. You know, like, so what do you think we're going to kind of... Oh, Kenta Shibata.
Yeah, Kenta Shibata is probably going to be a thing.
Yeah.
I mean...
What are you thinking?
Liger's retiring at the Dome that year. Yes. So there's a good chance, because they've teased it late last year, early this year, about Suzuki kind of getting on his ass. So... Liger Suzuki one time at the Dome, that could definitely be a marquee enough match for Wrestle Kingdom.
Real quick, Andrew, and this is just like nostalgic, but wouldn't it be cool if like Brian Pillman Jr. wrestled that match?
Honestly, you know what I've been wanting since I heard that he retired to talk about nostalgic, the retirement tour. I wanted to be Ultimo Dragon versus Liger one more time.
Does he still wrestle? Is
Ultimo does, yes.
Okay, well then that would be a hell of a match.
So I'm right there when it comes to nostalgia. I understand the Brian Pillman Jr. and Liger, like, because it was on the first Nitro. I definitely get all the threads, and I like that too. But personally, I was on the Dragon versus Liger one, which that'd be huge. I don't know how they feel about Dragon, because Dragon quit Dragon Gate about 15 years ago, mm-hmm. and just came back this year for their big Kobe World match, their big Kobe World show, and had like a 6-man match with a bunch of people that were formerly gone from the company. So Dragon is just my personal playlist, however you want to look at it.
I love the Suzuki idea, though, by the way, because it puts him in a prominent position. Suzuki is the dastardly evil guy. Liger, that's a great idea too.
The only thing I could see then, if Suzuki doesn't do the Liger one and it's somebody else, Suzuki's ZSJ could always face G.O.D. because Suzuki and ZSJ have a history of being tag champions because they were the British champions for mm-hmm. a long time. So that's definitely something you could play with.
And I think Suzuki has almost kind of anointed ZSJ as like the lieutenant.
It does seem like that. He picked ZSJ when they had the Interfaction undercard tag, when ZSJ and Archer had to face each other for the G1. Suzuki went with Saber. Archer got Yoshinobu Kanemaru. So that should tell you something right there.
Kanemaru, you get that guy.
Yeah, you get that guy. I'm gonna take Zach. Fuck you. So there's definitely something there. So Suzuki Saber, that beat something. Jay and Naito, I do like that match. And that would be redemption for Jay, because Jay lost to Tanahashi in his first match back for the IC. Mm-hmm. And if he could win it from Naito, I know it hurts to say, but if, it'd be something for Jay to kind of add as a feather in his cap, because they're going to build up Jay. You know they are. He's 26, absolutely. 7 years old. He's already got a pretty good grasp of his character.
And he's a top gaijin.
Yes. So he definitely deserves to get built up a little more. So Jay, that's fine. Naito can rebound. And like I said, I think by Dominion next year, Naito's going to have himself a title shot and probably win it, get himself a title run.
Huh. Well, oh, yeah. And I'm so, and you're thinking Moxley and Juice?
I think that's going to happen before Wrestle Kingdom, though. I think that's going to happen probably on the Destruction Tour, because they still got AEW tapings for TV that Moxley's going to have to be there for in October. So I think by destruction, he'll drop it to Juice, and then Juice will have his, you know, title defense most likely, or he might get shoved in a six-man. See, that's a weird thing with Wrestle Kingdom, because they've done it a couple different ways the last couple years, because I think the New Japan Rumble wasn't on it last year, and sometimes certain titles are pushed back to what used to be New Year's Dash, which now just might be Day 2. So that's the interesting thing, because Day 2 is unprecedented. So for all we know, the Intercontinental Championship would headline Day 2 and wouldn't even be on Day 1. So if Ibushi gets his way and he beats Okada, then we get Ibushi Naito for January 5th. And that just makes things interesting.
Wait a minute. LP and Ishimori are the junior tag titles? Tag champs?
Yep. El Fantasmo, yep.
What?
Yeah.
I'm looking at the roster right now. I have no idea. Wow.
Yeah, they kind of snuck that one in there. I think that was right before G1 where they won it, and then they kind of disappeared because they weren't on the G1 show for any of the undercard stuff. Ishimori's also in the Super J Cup, which Liger is presenting. So Ospreay's in that. Yeah.
Speaking of the Super J Cup, Amazing Red. It's dope as hell to see you in this. But stop playing the game with I'm going to retire, then I'm going to come wrestle, then I'm going to retire, then I'm going to come wrestle again. Like, I'm tired. Like, it's over, bro. Like, just wrestle. Like, you know, he just retired. He just said he retired, like, not even 2 months ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, you saw what spurred all this along, right?
No, I have no idea.
Oh, him and Ospreay started kind of not chirping at each other, but saying a couple little things. And Ospreay was kind of like, it'd be cool to wrestle you. And Red be like, yeah, I'd like, to, you know, wrestling you for my last match could be interesting. So what do we get round one of the Super J Cup? Because it's brackets. Yeah. It's Ospreay and Amazing Red. So that could very literally be Red's last match.
And that's a good point. I didn't think about that. I just saw a tournament. Mm-hmm. And a match that's been built up very well. LP is facing Robbie Eagles. I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yes, because El Fantasma is the reason Robbie Eagles isn't in Bullet Club anymore.
Yes, Robbie Eagles joined with his boy Ospreay in Chaos now, right?
Yep. Eagles is a Chaos boy. Plus, if everything works out, then we get Romero versus Bushi. And I know you didn't watch G1, but if you listen to any of the commentary, Rocky hates
Bushi with a passion, yes.
So that's just funny if they make that happen. So there's a lot of little things in the J Cup, which that'd be good because then it could also possibly give Ospreay a fucking challenger because he doesn't really have one at the moment.
I love the idea of Sabre and Suzuki going after the tag titles, but do you think it's too early to call up Sho and Yo?
Oh, yeah, I think they're going to have to be the junior aces, so to speak, for a little bit. Okay. It just makes too much sense to keep them down there, especially because the tag division on both ends is kind of weak. Yeah. And Sho and Yo do seem to have a lot of fan support. People like them. They come out. They're flashy. They're good looking. That kind of thing. They check all the boxes for a wrestler. So I think you definitely keep them where they can thrive. And if anybody comes up, it's Sho would probably be the first one to start questioning because he's got a build similar to Shingo. Mm-hmm. So if Shingo's obviously a heavyweight, Sho's not going to be really taken as a junior too much longer.
All right, my brother. Well, hey, this has been a blast. I don't get a chance to talk New Japan that much.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate having you on, man. Before we got here, anything else you want to add? Anything else you want to say?
Not really. Hopefully you just go to thechairshot.com. I was chronicling every day, all 19 nights of G1, so you could always catch up there in case you miss something. And aside from that, no, it's been fun to talk New Japan because I don't get to talk New Japan very much either myself because, you know, the shows I'm on and New Japan isn't always a heavy topic. So this was definitely fun. I enjoyed it.
Tell the good people where they can find you.
You can find me on the Twitter at IWC War Chief. And that's the only place I don't do the Instagram. So, yeah, sorry, just Twitter.
And, hey, promote your show. You have another show on. Man,
get your stuff out, bro. Should I do that?
Get your stuff out. Promote your show. Promote your OnlyFans you got going on right now.
I don't have an OnlyFans channel. That's a whole different thing. And I don't think I could promote that anyway if it was OnlyFans, but that's not the point. Yeah. So you could also catch me on Potty's War with the wonderful Mr. Chris Platt and our esteemed moderator, PC Tani. And that comes out basically whenever we get a shot to record. Like, sometimes it's Thursday, Friday, sometimes there's a week in between, but hey, it's funny, it's good stuff. If you like First Take, you'll like this.
Sounds a lot like The Edge.
Hey!
But of course, you can find me at It's Ray Cash, R-E-Y as in Mysterio, C-A-S-H as in dollars. And yeah, you are listening to Chair Shot Radio, at Chair Shot Radio, at thechairshot.com, where you always use your head. I appreciate you being on with me, brother. And tomorrow, I got another special thing for you guys listening, so I'm not going to tell you yet, but hope you enjoy. But thank you again. Guys, have a good night. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. That was fun. And see, don't downplay your New Japan knowledge, because watching it or not, you're pretty much up on everything.
So that's the one thing about me. I'm so deep into this shit. Like, I love